Marilyn Kring Productions in association with Emergent Life Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 1, delivered on August 20th.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Professor Alan Kring. You call me Professor Kring or Professor C. This is FIL 240, Section 2 for Fall Semester 2019. I'm going to go through the syllabus with you briefly, but comprehensively, to make sure you understand the basis of the class. A couple of things right off the bat that, just as a quick notice here, in the syllabus, and you read the syllabus, you are responsible. It's not one of those that you blow off. Let me give you a couple of warnings here before we start. I am loud and aggressive. I walk right up to people and I ask you questions. Don't say I don't know to me. I can be rather harsh at times, and I can try to be funny. Unfortunately, that doesn't usually work, but there you are on that. Background on me, dropped out of high school in the mid-70s, flunked out of college, joined the Army. I'm an Army veteran, cannon fire direction specialist, went back to Ohio State. I taught there until the end of the 1980s. I taught math there, economics, a couple of places. And I got into consulting and running my own businesses. And I got out of that in the early 2000s when I got into so much trouble with the wrong kind of people that now I'm very quiet. I've also, along the way, been a preacher, a DJ. I've also done some other things that I have regrets about, and I will bring those up to you in class. Regrets are better shared. And I am also, when I'm not a professor of finance here, I am also a professional artist and photographer. My work is available. You can't buy it. You can't afford it. You don't have the good taste for it anyway. On Amazon.com, the name of my company is Emergent Light Studio. I will bring up business in class. I'm one of your few professors who teaches business, who actually runs businesses. Runs them into the ground, but then again, I could be president doing that, considering who we have now. And by the way, if you're a right-winger or a leftist, I am going to try my best to just offend the hell out of you. Couple of brief points just about the lecture. Don't cheat in my class. I will eat you alive. There are sites online that you can go to and pay them to do your homework for you, your online homework. Once we track them down, we make them squeal and they turn over your IP addresses to us. And it doesn't matter if you're using a VPN. Don't try to use a VPN in this class or a Tor browser. Because I can cut right through those to get to who you are if you're going to cheat. And yeah, those sites are rather common. When you got someone who's acing all the online homework and then bombing the in-class stuff, yeah, that's a little suspicious there. Okay, my office hours are Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 to 2. I won't be in there this afternoon, but I will be here tomorrow to begin my office hours on Wednesday, which are from 11 to 1 p.m. You come in, you just sit down. There's a lot of people in there all the time, former students, current students, people I have no idea who they are or why they're there. But anyway, now, I expect you to understand the course competencies. Everything I do in this class has a purpose. Even when it doesn't seem like it does, it does. And your course requirements, you're going to do online homework. There's a chapter a week. So this week I'm covering chapter one. That means that a week from now, chapter one online homework will be due. And you'll see the rules of that. I'm going to have the guy from Cengage come in here and talk to you for a few minutes on Thursday. He wasn't available today. But I'll have him come in here and talk to you about how the homework is played out. You get basically three attempts for each one of the homeworks. But for God's sake, don't hit grade it now because that will blow all of your attempts. You work through each section and you can try each section of a homework three times. And then at the end of the semester, I drop your three lowest homework scores. So don't ask me for late work extensions. I do not give those. Unless it is a university-sponsored event or military service. In those cases, I will, but other than that, don't send me one of those emails. I know you said that not to ask, but I figured it was worth a shot. Don't do that. There are other things in email I would ask you not to do as well, like the one students who send me email, I have to get an A in this class. You know, I send back, what do I look like? Make a wish? The online cumulatives are just basically just a comprehensive covering the same material as the homework did. Those are online. All three of those count. Now, in class quizzes, I pop them through the semester, 8 to 10 of them. If you're here, you're here. If you're not, don't ask, when can I make that up? You're not going to make it up, and I'm going to hurt your feelings. I've been told not to hurt feelings these days because you're more fragile. Now, I was in the Army. I shot people, so I kind of don't understand that. Awkward. In class exams, there are there's a midterm, and then there's a final, and those are for largely, that is my lecture. I'm not doing PowerPoints. I am not a PowerPoint professor. You may have already seen those. Click, click, click. No, I don't do that. It's all in your face talking to you. And all and so those exams, if it's the book and me that said the same thing, well, that's great. But it's primarily what I've told you in the lectures day to day. Now, you notice I'm carrying a microphone. I podcast my lectures. I have for, since the early 2000s, I was one of the first educators iTunes, Apple iTunes took on. And I'll show you where that website is, where my the origin site for my podcast. It's not in ISU system. These are proprietary. So just know that that's going to be out there so you can listen to the podcasts again. You can listen to them while you are chilling with Netflix. You can listen to them while you're eating, while you're going to the toilet. You can listen to these and relive the dream that was this class. So don't, if you miss a class, listen to the podcast. Do not blow off my classes, though. I'll just listen to the podcast because I'm here and I expect you to be here, too. We are a ranked college now. The College of Business is ranked nationally. And so we expect, the employers are now expecting us to bring out the best. And that's what my job is to make you the best I can on your way to taking over the world. May God help us all. Attendance and participation. You should be here. Don't wander in 30 minutes late, scratching your ass, wondering why you had to leave Mr. Weed. Do not use computers in this classroom unless I say to. If you've got a computer, you keep that away because I will have my assistant over here, my teaching assistant, come up. She'll ask you, and if you don't do it for put it away for her, then I'll come up there and embarrass the hell out of you. No, none of your smartphones between your legs doing this. That's nasty, man. That looks weird. Besides which, don't look at your smartphone. I mean, really, you know, it's bad. You're not going to get any hits on Tinder, so lay off. Just let it go. I mean, for 75 minutes. No, and you can't use a computer to take notes. Either. You just don't use computers. There will be times in this class when I will say, bring your computer with you tomorrow because we'll be doing something on the computer. Especially, we're starting this process of trying to get you to be familiar with Excel. Now, a lot of people on the resumes come to me and they show me, and it says, proficiencies Excel. And that one, no, you have no idea what Excel is. You've used it. It's like that proficiency everyone puts. I can use Word. Well, yeah, duh. I mean, I'll bet you can use the potty, too. Everyone can use Word. Everyone can open Excel. What we do in these upper-level, upper-class courses is get you to the point where you understand that Excel is what you see in the workplace is nothing like playtime. It's like sometimes I will even show you some Excel sheets. They don't even look like Excel at all. And I'll get you toward that goal and help. You'll find that some of the things I'll show you are going to be awesomely useful to you in other classes that you take, especially when you have to download or capture data. I can show you how to take it right off a website and put it right into your Excel sheet and then dynamically update it every time you open that sheet. That's down the road. And I also, a TI-83 virtual calculator can be put on your computer. So if we're doing something that requires calculations, well, that's when I can say, open up your computer and pull up your virtual TI. That doesn't mean open up your computer and go on Snapchat and see if there's anything hot there. 90-80-70-60 scale, and most people are doing pretty well in this class. It's because I am the best teacher you ever had. But if you start getting into trouble, you need to get in to see me. And I will, anyway, I will try to get you back on class. No late work. I don't do that unless you are a first responder, military duty, or something along the line of a university-sponsored event. Those I do, I'm required to give you you slack for those. Do not record my class. Do not take photographs. Here's something that really, really bunches my boxers. I write all this stuff on the board, and then someone pulls up a camera. Click, click. Really? You know, you didn't write it down. You just wait until I wrote all that, and then you take a picture. Don't. Recording the class, do not record, do not photograph in the classroom. That's a violation, for one thing, that would be a violation of policies against privacy policies. Accommodations, and of course, now, textbook and Cengage MindTap. You have to buy it. It's going to cost you about $119 for the one semester. Now, some of you have already have it from other semesters. And do any of you have Cengage, a subscription to Cengage from other semesters? Yeah, sometimes you do. But just get this. It's an e-text and all of your access to the homework and phenomenal amounts of practice work that you just can't beat it for that. Now, if you want a hard copy, and unfortunately I'm one of those people, and probably some of you are, that like a physical copy of a book, well, that's available too. I think it's like $149 if you want the hard copy of the book too. I had an interesting thing happen. I teach globally for ISU, and I was down in Central America teaching this summer. And some of those students didn't quite understand. They thought they could, one or two of them could buy the book, and then they could all share it. And I didn't realize what was going on until like about the end of the first week, and then things got really, well, we can't afford that. Anyway, $119 isn't bad. Wait until you see the textbooks in some of your upper-level courses. Okay, you're going to need a TI calculator, TI-83. Try not to bring in, if you're going to bring in some other calculator, like one of the lower-end Texas Instruments, BA-2 or one of those, you're going to have a problem with some of what we do. The TI-83 is so strong in its finance apps that professionals like me use it. Even though there are fancier financial calculators, Hewlett-Packard has one called the HP12C. It's almost like a card. It does incredible things, but it's too much for, and it's just, the TI-83 is a good calculator. And if you want, you can download one. I've got on the resources tab the link to where you can download it. Now, if you are, that's for a PC. If you are using a Mac, I'm sorry for you. But other than that, it might be a little tricky trying to get it to work in a Macintosh type of environment. But you shouldn't be using Macs anyway. Friends don't let friends buy Macs. But you can also buy a physical TI-83. Sometimes you can get them over at what's the name of it? Game Exchange over on Veterans Parkway. They sometimes have stacks of them over there that are cheap, so you can get it there. Otherwise, just get the virtual TI, and when we use it, like I say, just open your computer if you need the TI. Now, here's your schedule of the classes, of the class. We are doing a chapter a week in this class, and it keeps its pace up pretty strongly. And I am pouring material at you, especially take good notes, because I say things that are not in the book. I fill in blanks. And there's another thing, too. Madam, if the book disagrees with me when I say something, who's right? Oh, you're good. She's good. You're good. Yeah, there will be sometimes. The one author says a couple of things that I'm not sure what he was using, but it was probably something stronger than blow. He said some things that were, I mean, just, you, that's not right. Where did you get your degree, Coney Island? And then he gets back on track. So I'm sure it's something that's just kind of a rolling temporary thing with him. But anyway, so there will be times when the book and I disagree. I'm right, the book is wrong. That's all there is to it. You'll find that that's the way it is in your workplace too. Even if you disagree, you yourself disagree with the CEO, if he says something, you're not going to say, sir, you're wrong. And he'll say, boy, you're fired. Just keep pace with it. Stay frosty. Just stay on track. Get some stuff done every night, and you won't get behind. And like I said, most people do okay in this class. It's not, I'm not here to destroy. Well, yeah, I am, but they won't let me. Just keep up with the homework online and get yourself to the class. Don't blow it off. I don't want to see half the class missing like it used to be in here. I'll pop a quiz. Sometimes if I see, I've got quizzes in reserve. If there's not as many people as I expect in a classroom, then I'll just have a quiz. And then you drop, I drop your three lowest quiz scores. So if you aren't here for a quiz, don't ask me when you can make it up. That's one of your three drops. You don't get three drops, your three lowest scores dropped, and some extras because you're kind of special. No, you get three. So if you miss a quiz, it's a zero, and that's one that will be dropped. Unless, of course, you get all eight zeros, and then that might not be the zero that's dropped, but that's weird. I can't think about that. Anyway, you read the syllabus. Make sure you understand. This is going to be the way it is in your work life, because they're going to give you these company manuals and things like this. I don't need to read that. And then you get blindsided by something that's in there that you didn't know was in there. This gives you the philosophy, the scope, and sequence of the course. And now you're beginning to have your shock front of seeing the professor who's going to teach it. You'll get used to me. And if you can't, well, you can bitch about it at the student evaluation, or maybe even go on Oprah Winfrey and tell about how I ruined your life by being mean to you. There you are. This is my teaching assistant. She is here to, here's the weird thing. She's here to assist me in teaching. That's why we call you the teaching assistant. She will come around, and if we're doing something like an Excel, she might be able to move to you faster than I could and give you some answers. She's also going to be prowling the classroom to make sure you're not having a little phone in your lap trying to text your BFF or something like that. This is a class that is quite professional. Even though things get out of hand, they're not my fault. It just so happened that sometimes some strange things happen in this classroom. Trust me, you may have heard some rumors. They're all lies about what happens here. But anyway, I'm going to take this down now, and I'm going to get started with you. By the way, this is all on a podcast. Oh, that's right. Let me do that. I'm going to show you the podcast site. Now, what's up there now is last spring. But here's the web address of the podcast. Now, inevitably, we're going to get close to the midterm, and I'm going to have 20, 30 of you asking, what was the website where you were podcasting your lectures? Was that at ReggieNet? No, it's my own website, isu-prof.com. Now this, you'll need a flash player, but this is last, every lecture for every section of 240 has its own post. Now you can play it on the flash player. They don't want flash in here. They're in that weird hysteria that flash is evil. It's a flash player. You can play it right here through your computer, or you can download it right here on the hyperlink and put it into your computer, and then your computer will play it on its native or its default player, like Windows Media Player or whatever it is that you've got as your default QuickTime. But you can download it here instead of just playing it. And then you can also, this is Apple iTunes. And like it's called the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. And I've been broadcasting for many years. It, like I said, one of the very earliest who knew how to write the code to get the spiders to pick it up. And then they approved the podcast because they were just trying to get into podcasts of academic and intellectual subjects so that they weren't exclusively just very bad musicians trying to get their first album noticed. But each one of them is available there. Now, they show you 10, and then they archive ones behind that. But it's there for you to listen to. Now, the first podcast, I will process post-production tonight and then put it up. The Apple spiders usually find it within a couple of hours, and then as soon as they find it, it'll be here. They'll look for on my website for something for new content, and if one of the spiders catches it, the spider will pick it up and take it back to Apple iTunes. So that usually takes sometimes 24 hours. So after it is on my site, 2 to 24 hours later, it will be on iTunes for you as well. And that, like I said, is something that is there for you so that you have another way to listen to my lectures and enjoy them over and over and over again. 30, 40 years from now, you'll listen to them again and relive the love that we had in this class. Or not. Okay. But anyway, Apple iTunes is in this icon right here. Now, other things, I've got a couple of sites here that are useful for people or professionals in subjects in business. Now, also, here on the sidebar is the assignment's just what's current. The scrolling marquee is extra or something like if I got killed in a car accident, I'd put it up here. And tell you that, when we'd have our next lecture. Now, on this side, I was a writer of political, academic, and social commentary for many years. And these are some of my major articles that have to do with economics and finance. Unfortunately, I offended the pigs of Anonymous and their boy band, and they wrecked my site. I'm rebuilding it, but it's not ready yet. So these are dead links. Thank goodness the Wayback Machine archived everything I ever created so Anonymous can go and kiss my backside. I've also got a game room here. You can play games. Battle over Black Eagle. I mean, you don't need to go any... I probably should get rid of Where's Osama. I mean... Really? That's still there? Wow. Update your website, fat boy. Okay. Anyway, and one last thing. Like I said, I am a professional, and you'll see a lot of, sometimes I'll bring in my own financial statements. We'll talk about them. We'll talk about more than just numbers, because finance is more than numbers. Numbers are just our starting point. But just to legitimize and show you, I have my own sales site, but Amazon.com earlier this year accepted me as the first independent artist that they ever allowed to have his or her own storefront on Amazon. They had ever before that always required that a gallery or an art broker, art agent, represent an artist, and I was the first one, I think, who did allow, they allowed. So this is where I am in my professional life outside of here. Part of why I do this is that I learn every time I run a business, I learn how to teach business better. And as you can see, no, you can't afford my artwork, and besides which, it's illegal in Illinois for me to sell to people I meet through ISU. So you can just say, wow, he's awesome as an artist, and this is damn good art. So don't bitch at me about it. Don't hate my art. Now, down to the business of this lecture. By the way, I go the whole time. So if you start packing up 5 minutes before, making noise and all of that, and getting on your starting blocks, I will have a word with you about sitting down and relaxing for a couple more minutes. The first things first, this is introduction to finance. Before I do that, I need to be a little bit broader. You're in the College of Business. You're majoring in a business discipline. And so I'm going to start this out with a simple question. Sir, what is business? That was really obtuse. Let's try it again. What is business?
Reaching out to consumers.
To consumers?
Oh, my God, I don't know.
Madam, what is business? Well, I used to do that when times were rough, but, you know. Shut up. Decorum, people. Decorum. What is business?
Running a business.
Running a business, yeah. That. Selling something. Okay. You see, there's the problem right off the bat. I do this every time, and I just get all over the board, but it really comes down to this. Business is creating a product or a service from raw or intermediate goods. Business is creating a product or service from raw or intermediate goods for the purpose of bearing a reward for the risk taken. For the purpose of bearing a reward for the risk taken. And that's the thing about it. You are not going to do something unless you expect a reward for it. You will not do anything unless there is something in it for you. In a capitalist system, we are greedy. And there is nothing wrong with greed. Get that out of your mind. All of this stuff about socialism and stakeholders, put it away. You are 21st century American business people in a world of cutthroat predators who are going to eat you alive if you've got something better to do with your time than make money. Guarantee you the Chinese, the Japanese, the Russians, the Europeans, the South Americans, they're all clamoring for that same reward that you want. This is not bad at all. Greed is good when it does not involve unethical conduct. Even then, don't get the impression that ethics is something that is global. Most of the wealthy people, the greats of business that you've heard of over your lifetime, the successful people, many of them were unethical and criminal in their activities. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, George Soros, Donald Trump, they were not ethical people. They broke laws, they hurt people in their path. I hope you won't have to do that, but unfortunately there's that. Let me explain this to you. You, sir, are a bread maker. You make bread. Now, there's no other bread maker in your village. So you don't have any incentive to really keep your prices down because you're a monopoly. You're a spatial monopoly. You can charge whatever you want. And you can waste product, the inputs. You could take flour, oops, missed that time, put some more in, just pass it through to the customer. You hire your lazy, ne'er-do-well brother here, and all he does all day is sit in the basement, eat Cheetos, and play World of Warcraft. Really? World of Warcraft? That's lame. That's old people stuff. But anyway. But you don't have to worry about it. Why would you do anything? I mean, you can just pass through your prices. Okay, now, you make a huge amount of money doing what you do. Even though you're sloppy or lazy, prices are high, you're making a fortune. Well, there's a principle that goes not just within our species, but in almost all living things. If you, sir, see him making a lot of money, you know what the first thing you're not going to say, boy, he's really cool. No. Yeah, he's an asshole. He's got a car and a girl, and he's still got a neck beard. And if you have any desire not to just sit in the sand and cry, you're going to go in and you're going to figure out, his costs are ridiculous. I can charge a lower price for the product just by not wasting the inputs, just by not hiring lazy people. I'm not afraid to fire people. I'm not afraid to fight for lower costs for my suppliers. So all you have to do is bring down your costs and you can charge a lower price than he is and take his business. Using the existing resources and technology more efficiently, using the resources and the existing technology more efficiently is called static efficiency. Static efficiency. You're just using the inputs more effectively. You're doing the same thing he is, a big grinding stone and kneading the bread and all that. But now, you, madam, realize, wait a minute, I've got a better way to make bread. Those two guys are using manual labor. Have you ever seen how bread's made? You just keep squeezing it and turning it over and squeezing it and all that kind of stuff. And they're using these old grinding wheels that wear out and then they have to get a new one. I can do it more efficiently with a motorized machine that can just keep turning the bread, moving it faster down the line on a conveyor belt instead of them picking it up and taking it over. I can use not the old-fashioned grinding wheels to grind the grain that we get. I can actually do them in high-speed stainless steel blade machines to get the wheat down to flour. And I can save money because I'm not hiring as many people, and the people I am hiring are better skilled, and I'm producing the product at a higher speed, so I'm producing more, so I can realize economies of efficiency. This is what we call dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency is changing the technology to produce a lower cost. Now, the word technology these days is used so stupidly. When they say technology, all they mean is stupid computers. Technology in your home. Technology in your toilet. Technology in your ass. No. Technology is just how you put these inputs together to create an output. We've been doing technology since the dawn of time. And you have just found a better technology that brings down prices. Because you can lower the price of your bread because you are bringing down the cost. And you are doing this. First of all, you did this to him. Not because you brought down the price of your bread, not because you love customers. You see, we say that. We're in this for you. We care about you, customers. Oh, no, you don't. If they didn't buy your bread, you'd be calling them the filthy names that everyone else who's gone out of business has called their customers. You did this because you were greedy. You wanted to take his money away from him. As a consequence of your greed, your consumers get a better product. You don't use as much of the resources, so you're actually helping the environment. And you did the same thing. You did not care at all about your customers when you brought down the prices. You just wanted them to buy your bread. You didn't do it because you love people. You didn't do it. You might love people. That's a little creepy if you love everybody. You know, I love you. I used to do that. I love you. You know, I got slapped around a lot. But the you did it because you're greedy. Your job is to drive him out of business, and he wants to send you into bankruptcy. And you're doing this so that their kids will have to go to Heartland Community College instead of ISU. Or worse yet, Illinois Wesleyan University. Oh, I will so edit that out of here. You understand that in its proper form, our capitalist system, with its emphasis on greed, drives a world. What you are seeing here, you can bitch about it all you want about the bad environmental pollution, the global climate change, and all those nasty things, but at the same time, it sure as hell is a lot better than the places where I've been in my war years. Trust me on that. You can make it better, and that's what I expect you to do, just like we made it better in my time and before my time. You can do that. Now, there's one last point here you understand. I want you to imagine you've taken the market now. You've nailed down you've got market share. It's just awesome. Now, suppose that you've got a sign over your shop that says, "My bread tastes like butt. It tastes horrible." You're not going to get any customers if you don't produce a good product. Mommy takes his little boy and, "No, Mommy, I don't want that bread. That bread tastes like butt." "Oh, shut up there. Kids starving in China would love to have a butt sandwich right about now." You understand that you can't kill your customers with your products forever, and they keep coming back to you. So there is an internal drive. Now, that does not mean that we don't need regulation, food and health and safety regulations. But there is an internal mechanism within our capitalist system that pushes us away from doing things just nasty. We still do, and if our enforcement was better, we'd nail all the people who do things wrong, but we don't. But there is an internal mechanism that keeps you from making bread that is bad. Because customers won't buy it if you kill them all, for one thing, and they'll go back to him. There are many technologies that have been tried, new technologies. Business is full of new technologies that just absolutely suck. And we actually pull back to old technologies. As a matter of fact, one of the unfortunate things in this time is that some of these new technologies are bad, but because companies have so much market power, they force them on us, and they won't let us go back in time to a better technology. That's a problem too, right there. But anyway, let me give you a little background here. Every day in the class, when we're in the classroom, one of the things that I'll start out with is showing you the screens as they are. I'm going to teach you how to read stock and bond charts and begin a process where you are empowered to make decisions for yourselves instead of letting other people make decisions for you, and instead of letting people tell you things that are just outright insanely wrong. One problem we have in finance is that these financial news shows and networks, they are populated by some of the dumbest, most ridiculous people saying things that are absolutely irresponsible to say, and yet they do it all the time. I'm going to teach you how to read stock charts yourself. I'm going to teach you how to invest. In fact, at one point in this semester, I'm going to teach you how to become millionaires. I actually will. I'm not even kidding about that. Oh, well, you could become a millionaire, or you could become so broke you can play handball on the curb. you know, there's that risk and return thing again. By the way, water only in this classroom. This is water. It's black, nasty, but it's water. Oh, God, what did I put in? Oh, that's just a cat. Dropped a toy in there. Okay. Now, some of you are finance majors. Most of you are not. I might be able to turn a few of you to the dark side through the course of this semester, but most of you would prefer to do something less with your lives, like accounting, marketing, human resources, management. But I try not to offend people. My main focus, I don't pick on marketing too much because you're not going to have jobs. But I do attack the accountants because they are going to have jobs that pay a lot of money, but they'll have no lives. But finance is actually, there's this myth that still shows up sometimes that finance is something to do with accounting. It is not. Finance is a subdiscipline of economics, which is one of my advanced degrees. It is an application of economics to specific types of problems, and it's very quantitative and theoretical when you get to the grad level. But it is not accounting. Accounting, we use accounting information. However, we have to fix it. And we also have to look at it in a very careful light because we know that accountants, by their rules, must report situations financially in a way that is not useful to us at all. One very important part of this is that accounting uses historical costs. And historical costs really don't mean a lot to a financial person because we are looking at what is going to happen down the road, what's happening next. See, in accounting, they have to have documentation. What did this cost? Report it in the proper way according to generally accepted accounting principles, consistently applied, all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't mean anything to us. What happened yesterday happened yesterday. What we need to know is what's going to happen tomorrow. And oftentimes, the past can give us kind of like guidelines, but the future is all new. In fact, in a stock market, the price of a stock yesterday really doesn't, where a stock's price moved yesterday really doesn't have anything whatsoever to do with where it's going to move today. It is actually one example of a universal physical system called a martingale process. It doesn't rely on the past because where it is right now has all of the past already in it. This is the same principle that drives a chess game. The current state of a chessboard is exactly what you need to see. It does not matter at all to what was the board's position at any other point. All that matters to your next decision, your next move, is where it is now. It is right there in front of you. So that's the way stock prices are. There's nothing to be gained from looking at a stock price in the past or stock price charts as far as predicting where it will be the next day. It just doesn't work that way. It is a system that is very much one of the most common systems in the universe, where it is purely forward looking. The past is already right there in the state of the system. Don't look back to find anything. It ain't there. Okay, now that's the worst one, historical costs. Accounting information, which we will use for a class like this especially, is historical. The other problems are things like sunk costs, S-U-N-K. A sunk cost is a cost that you have already incurred. A sunk cost is a cost you have already incurred. Let me give you an example of a sunk cost. My favorite of all time, when I was a consultant, what I did, one of my primary things as a consultant, I helped small companies go public. In other words, become public listed stock. But I helped, and I also was a rainmaker, and I worked with a group of financiers who would bring money to the table to help companies get on their feet. Unfortunately, that money, I didn't know where it was coming from at the time, but I did find out eventually. But the thing, though, is that I was consulting for this one small company. It had a project. It was running. I came in about a week before they had a big meeting of the directors, and they said, okay, we've got a project underway. We're going to have to spend another $2.5 million to get this project to the finish line. And that was what they were going to talk about at this meeting. And the president of the CEO, president slash CEO, said, well, we've already spent like almost that much already. We have to keep going. Well, that's a sunk cost fallacy. That money's gone. It's not there. All that matters is this. Is the money that is about to be invested going to have an acceptable return on that investment? What you've already done is gone forever. It's not even on the table anymore. It's the same thing with stocks. When you invest in stocks, sir, you come to me, you say, "Oh, I bought stock for $100 last year, and now it's $10." And I want to know what your thoughts are. The first thing I say, well, what are your thoughts? What are you planning? What do you want? He said, well, I want to recover my $100. Well, actually, that's absolutely stupid. You know where that $100 you spent last when you bought that stock is? You know where that $100 is now? It's with Jesus. It's gone forever. There is no $100. There is no $100 anywhere. There is $10. And your decision on whether to hold, sell, or increase your stake is based upon the current state of that company that stock represents. There is nothing about $100 anywhere on this earth. It's gone. You spent that $100. Well, that was an extra martini at some Wall Street guy's lunch. Seriously. And that's one of the problems we have with amateur investors. We love you guys when you think you're geniuses. Yeah, I invest with Robin Hood. Well, you're suckers. You're stupid. And we love you. We can buy extra steaks, extra booze, you know, the whole nine yards. With the money that you think you're being a genius investing and you're just plain stupid. Keep that in mind. Yes, I was there with those guys at one time. And no, they don't. They love you, amateur investors. They really love you. Okay, sunk cost. Now, another incredibly important cost that is not anywhere in accounting, but is absolutely the dominant cost in almost all financial decision making, is opportunity cost. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. In other words, this is a cost that does not come out of your pocket. It is something that did not go into your pocket. Accounting can't show that. But it is what drives your decision making. And I'll give you a great example of that here. Madam, you decided to major in finance. You're not now, right?
Right.
You decided to major in finance. I mean, after this incredible experience you had in a FIL 240 with this awesome professor. Wait. Oh, I almost kicked that tumor up that time. Okay, now, and we make the arrangements for you to get a great job at State Barn. $60,000 a year, that's right. Living la vida loca. And so what we have now is there you are at the graduation. And I'm one of those faculty members who sit there in our black robes in two rows. You are so unworthy of this degree. Oh, God, my babies are leaving. But yeah, we love to see you go off. You're successful. There you go. I see you, and I'm waving bye. And you're saying, bye, professor. And you disappear. 2 years later, you come to my office. Oh, my God, can't remember your name worth a crap. I mean, I'm getting old that way. But anyway, you got a job at State Barn, and you got, like, you were making 60. You're probably well up there in the ranks now, probably making 80, 90. I'm so proud of you. And you said, no, Professor C. I decided when I was driving away that I couldn't do that. I had to live my dream. What was your dream? I opened my own donut shop. Wait, what? And I just got back my first full year's annual income statement from my accountant. I made a profit of $20,000. Aren't you proud of me, Professor C? And I say, you dumbass. You didn't make $20,000. You lost $40,000. You understand that? You go and you burn that donut shop. Bring me the donuts. Let's not get radical here. I mean, that's arson if you burn the donuts. Donut arson. It's very, very evil. Okay, you understand what has happened here? Your decision making. Trust me. I ran companies where on paper I made money. But in reality, in terms of free cash flow, taking into account what I could have been doing instead, I wasn't. And eventually, you get a phone call. Ring, ring, hello. And you know who it's from? It's from Clueville. Clueville is telling you, get a clue. You're losing money doing this. You could be doing something better with your time. There is a place there. Okay. Years ago, out here, I was teaching in another university. A private university where all the kids sit very nicely, perky and all of that, and then they pretend to be perfect, and then they go home and get wasted and blottoed and baked. But they were real fine students, and they were all told, you are going to go and hear the mayor of Bloomington tell you about her plans, her dream, her legacy, which was to build an arena in Bloomington. Now, you understand that that is exactly how cities get poor, and the hustlers behind it eventually wait for the cities to break, and then they come in and buy the stadiums at pennies on the dollar. It was hopeless. But there she came, all of my students, just sitting there looking really perky and attentive and all that kind of stuff. And she presented the plan for the arena. And it was just an amazing thing. She brought in her finance guy. She brought him in on a leash. Come, boy, sit. And after she had given her promotion and the bankers, highly respectable bankers in town had given their endorsement and all of that, well, then the finance guy came up because I said, you need to show the financials because I've got finance people here. Some of these business majors are finance majors, and I want all of them to see what goes into saying yes or no to a project. You're going to learn how to do that in this class. It's called capital budgeting. The decision-making process involves laying out all the numbers. Well, the first thing that was unbelievable, for this arena, they said that their audience, where they'd be able to grab tickets, was within a 60-mile radius of Bloomington, Illinois. Oh, who am I kidding here? Of Bloomington, Illinois. Right there, their assumptions were dead in the water. What's within 60 miles of Bloomington? The Peoria Civic Center. You know what else is within 60 miles? Corn. You're going to target Peoria and Bloomington, and there's a Superior Stadium in Peoria, and then you think you're going to sell to mom, pa, Homer, farmer, Prairie Hillbilly? Yeah, I think we should go and listen to some rock and roll tonight. I hear some group called Insane Clown Posse's playing. Yeah, watch them at the gathering. Anyway. Okay, you see right there. Their assumptions for revenue were just wildly too strong. The next thing, and you're going to learn about that too, how you make good assumptions for your revenue stream, who's your demographic target, all that, the stuff that marketing does. But then there was the cut, when he went to the cost, he was showing all the costs, the different costs and all that, and when he got through it, and then he said, do you have any questions? And of course, my students just wanted to get the hell out of there, you know, like you would do right now with me. And so it was quiet, and I just raised my hand, and I said, where is the cost of the land? And he said, oh, we already own the land. You already own the land. Well, isn't that special? Did you learn about opportunity cost? I don't care if you own the land. That is a cost to this project. Because you could have done something else with the land, like sell it. The fact that you didn't, that you use it for this project, means that it is a cost to that project even though you own the land. That's an opportunity cost from hell. Yeah, this TV I bought as a kit cost only $100, and it took me only about 5,000 hours to put it together. Well, yeah, there's your cost right there. You ever notice at these rock concerts, you have wasted stoners, losers, and all kinds of bikers, and a few people who follow very bad trends like... What is that thing I heard down in Central America? It was a fusion of mariachi and polka. My God. Anyway, look, they don't make a lot of money, so of course they're going to be able to stand in those long lines. The same is true with young teenagers. They play hours and hours of games because the opportunity cost of their time is so low. The same is true with going to grocery stores. You ever gone to a... Okay, we got grocery stores that are higher end. You've got your Target. You've got your Schnucks that charge higher prices. Now, but then you've got Walmart. Walmart, low prices every day, 24/7. The lowest prices in town. Oh, yeah? Okay. You know what, Walmart? Okay, full disclosure, I'm a Walmart hoe. I go there, okay? First thing you do is you're probably going to have to park in another county, and then you're going to walk through the parking lot, and you're nearly going to get hit by some prairie hillbilly in a giant truck that has a bumper sticker on the back that says, my wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never. And then you're going to walk into that damn store, and the first thing you're going to hear, hi, welcome to Walmart. And you're looking around, oh, God, they're hiring midgets for greeters now. You're going to walk down the aisles, you're going to have some fat-ass person right in the middle of the aisle. Honey, what do you want for dinner? Get out of the way, cow. And then you have to wait in the line to check out. You got 500 people in front of you, and you got the kids in there's a kid in the cart right in front of you, and he's picking his nose, staring at you while his mom looks at Cosmopolitan magazine lady. It ain't worth looking at. And then you got the bearded guy that's got the tattoos that say things that are really weird. But look, and then, of course, at the front of the line, you've got Grandpa figuring out how to use a debit card for the first time, swipe. Well, it didn't work that time. Hurry up, Grandpa, you're going to die soon. Go home and eat. Okay, opportunity cost again. When I was traveling with the high-flying crowd down at Disney, they had a membership in a club where you got to go down under the lines that were waiting for the rides and come back up, and you were first. You got to go places on trams underground. You got to eat in restaurants no one even knew about. You see, they were willing to pay, and that reflected the higher opportunity costs of their time. Instead of standing in the sun for 2 hours to ride a ride that was going to remove some of your tendons that connected organs together. 2 hours, low opportunity cost of time because they don't make a lot of money. High opportunity cost of time you'll pay to get around the line. Just like you'll pay higher prices at Target. You'll pay higher prices at Schnucks. You'll pay higher prices at some of the upscale whole food and health food markets because you don't have the time is money, literally. And you're going to get to that point, too. Right now, time is kind of in that in-between. You're beginning to see the pressure of homeworks and all of that, and you're beginning to look forward to making enough money so that you can live in poverty after you've paid your student loan payments every month and all that kind of good stuff. So it is there, and it is real, and in finance, we can't just pretend something doesn't exist. It does, whether or not you want to believe it exists. Opportunity costs exist. As a side note, just as it sounds kind of weird, I run a club, Business Association of Economics and Finance, okay? I also run a paranormal ghost hunting club. And I kid you not, we got a Facebook page. The original founders called it Paranormal Hunters. And they said, get it, Professor C, paranormal? And I thought, I'm in hell. Yeah, we got there's some cool photos on there of things we've caught on campus. But when there's something scary, there were a couple. There was this one guy, you know, macho guy. As soon as he thought that there was something really in that room that was not a human, he closes his eyes. That isn't going to help. You know, it's still going to eat your soul, bruh. You know? Don't close your eyes. You got to keep your eyes wide open. What are the real costs of this? And that's one of the things about why businesses fail. They underestimate what it's going to cost, and they overestimate what they're going to make. I can't tell you the number of consulting jobs I started, and they showed me their product, and they said, this is going to sell like hotcakes. Well, if the hotcakes taste like, you know, nasty, yeah. They didn't understand. Even a great product can't get off the ground a lot of times. I've seen amazing technologies. People talking about something right now. Oh, this is incredible, new age. I saw it in the 90s. These things that were, they just couldn't get a market for them. They didn't know how. They wanted me to, and I didn't know how. That wasn't my job. So you got to be realistic about what it's going to take. Sometimes you've got a wonderful idea, you just have to give up on it. They didn't give up on the arena, and now every year the thing bleeds red ink, and it is on the verge of just absolutely, they're finally going to say, okay, hustlers who talked us into this, it's yours now, take it. And that's the way it works with almost every one of these idiotic cities that builds with public money some kind of a sports arena. Eventually, sooner or later, the hustlers come back from Chicago, New York, L.A., and they say, oh, you're really losing money. Well, you know, we'll take it off your hands. And then it's successful because it's in the hands of those who know how to make a buck. And that's what government most certainly should never do, is make a buck. It shouldn't run deficits either, but there's that. Okay, now, first things first. Madam, have you ever made money? You ever made money just doing something for someone else? Yeah. Have you? You know, you watch a house, you babysit some snotty kids, you walk the dog or the cat. Well, you don't walk cats, you drag cats. you were a sole proprietor. The sole proprietorship is the most common business organization on earth, both now and historically. The sole proprietorship. It's one person. You're just doing your own thing. Now, about that. In other words, revenue comes in, you just put it on your ordinary income. Just adds. Of course, a lot of people just pretend that's not happening. Now, you can give it a fictitious name. Some states call it an assumed name, some places call it a fictitious name. But it's just a you, And a state has, you've applied to a state to use, like in Illinois, I'll give you an example. Here in Illinois, before I incorporated my company, Emergent Light Studio, it was actually just a DBA, a doing business as, a DBA. It was called, and it was still me, but what I did was I made some application through the county to the state, and then the state said, okay, you have to publish this in a business newspaper for like, I think it was like 6 weeks, and if no one challenges it, the publisher sends back, gives you a little receipt that says no one challenged. You take that back down to the county clerk, and they give you a certificate that says, this belongs to you now. So I could go to go to my bank and say, this is my DBA, my fictitious name or my assumed name, and if I get checks, they're mine, and put them into my account. That's very common. I've done that many times, and for myself, you may see some of my work under the label Dark Wraith Publishing. That was my writing. It was not a pen name. That pen name, well, it was, but it was also a DBA. It was a fictitious name. And so was the Emergent Light Studio. And then I transferred the rights to that to the corporation when I formed it. And then last year, I applied and got a registered trademark with the U.S. government. That was a pain in the ass process, but Amazon said, you can't come here and be part of our world until you're registered. So there's that. The one thing, though, is that there's a problem with, one, it's so simple. You just do something, you make money. That's all. It has incredible simplicity. However, there's a problem with it. You decide, well, let me see, who haven't I bothered yet? You decide, sir, that you are going to mow lawns. You got yourself one of those zero-turn, those are real cool. And, you know, you got some hedging trimmers and you got your truck. And you got a DBA, one man and his truck. That's your DBA. So you mow lawns and do hedge clipping for rich people in the community here, in Ironwood, a place like that. So one day you're driving along in this yard, you're just cowboying along, and you run over the lady's prize poodle. Hey, 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 hey! You give that animal a show dog trim. Well, she's going to sue you. And she's going to sue you for what that dog costs, $20,000. So you have to give up your mower, your truck, your hedge clippers, and even that beard trimmer that's giving you that really nice look to your beard. Look at that. That's perfect, man. I mean, I can't do that.
You know?
Walmart. No, I'm not going to Walmart. I go to this place called Yeti Is Us, okay, to get my hair care products.
I'm not from around here.
Okay, yeah, you've missed out. Yeti. Anyway, okay, Sasquatch is their parent company. Okay, now, the thing, though, is that when they're finished going through that, that got them only about $3,000, they're just going to come after you. They're going to take everything you own because liabilities come before ownership. You own that, but I own that. Doesn't matter. Your liabilities come before ownership. You remember that. Ownership is the residual claim. Liabilities are the prior claim. And the court will say, give it all up. You had to give up your house trailer, those Velvet Elvis paintings, and that chair that has the auto massage feature and all that kind of stuff. You had to give that up, and you gave up your 20-inch black and white TV. Bad times. In other words, you are all at risk. All at risk. Everything you own is on the table. And this is a principle that I will bring you up on. It's a corporate principle. Is that if you don't pay your liabilities in a timely manner, they can do whatever they want to you with a court's blessing. They can shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your parents wear furry costumes that please them. They can do it all. Yes, I just brought furries in a finance class. Top that, accounting. Well, I'm not going to do this on my own. I'm going to get my partner there. He and I are best buds and all this. You know, we're going to get in this all together. So we're going to form ourselves a partnership. My gosh. Okay. The problem here is that you're no better off because you know what? If you screw up and you don't have the money, they'll take it out of his backside. You are jointly and severally all at risk. All you've done is shared it. And worse yet, a lot of partnerships, when people came to me and said, how do we do a partnership format? They really didn't know each other. For all you know, you take in all these people as partners, you know, because you're all friends. You were lived through a finance class together, so you're all friends. Turns out, she's an axe murderess. You're an arsonist. You are a stranger danger. And you, I don't even want to talk about it because anyway. But you are responsible for anything they do under that company label. Fully. As are they. Joint and several liability. So it is more than one person. It's just a sole proprietorship. More than one person doing it. And you are jointly and severally all at risk. Didn't get out of it. Now, there's something else about this, too. I'm going to have to tell you something that's really not... I hate saying this, but I have to. I understand that people are a little more fragile these days, but I've got to say this. Madam, you are going to die someday. Did you know that? These will die with you. You keep that in mind. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.